It's Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Bayshore. On June 24, 1950, Northwest Airlines Flight 2501 left New York City for Seattle. The state-of-the-art DC-4 aircraft was to stop in Minneapolis for refueling before proceeding to the West Coast. Monitoring the plane in threatening weather over Lake Michigan, air controllers lost track of the flight. The aircraft was never recovered, nor were any passengers or crew. Further wreckage discovered some days later indicated a total loss. Valerie Van Heest is a Holland-based diver, shipwreck historian, and author of the recent book, Fatal Crossing, The Mysterious Disappearance of NWA Flight 2501 and the Quest for Answers. Van Heest spoke with WKAR's Peter Wharf about today's 64th anniversary of the tragedy and the parallels with a more recent aviation mystery.
Today's search for Malaysia Airlines, I'm certain that won't end until there are some answers uncovered. There were so many things that were similar. It was haunting for me 3 months ago when Malaysia disappeared because the similarities were confounding. Both planes were missing for a period of time. People wondered, was it a hijacking? Was it a bombing? Was it an accident? Was weather involved? And all those things went through people's minds in 1950. The difference was here in Lake Michigan, after 3 days, we did discover wreckage floating on the surface of the lake, and it confirmed the tragedy. We don't have any such confirmation with Malaysia.
It appears from your article, Lost Over Lake Michigan, from the recent issue of Michigan History Magazine, that weather was likely involved or could have played a part in some case. Can you sort of recall the story of that takeoff from LaGuardia Airport in New York City with Captain Robert Lind?
Sure, absolutely. Well, it was June 23rd, early evening, and 58 people, including three crew members, the pilot Robert Lind and the co-pilot Vern Wolf and the stewardess Bonnie Ann Feldman. And it was a normal flight cross-country. It was going to arrive about 18 hours later in Seattle, initially with a stop in Minneapolis. And the pilot was aware that there was a storm brewing over the Lake Michigan, moving through the Midwest. He took action to try to fly under the storm, requesting clearances along the way to go lower. But his final clearance when he was over Lake Michigan, his request to go from 3,500 to 2,500 was denied, supposedly due to other traffic over the lake. Well, we don't know if that denial contributed to the accident. We don't know if the pilot might have tried going down under storm clouds. Anyhow, it was his prerogative to do whatever he thought was safe, despite what air traffic control might tell him. But without further communication, without any notice from him of problems, the plane simply vanished. All these years later, after 10 years of research, prompted largely by our desire, my team's desire to find this wreck and solve the mystery that the government wasn't able to solve, all that research has now given us a much better idea of what happened that night, although, you know, there are some aspects of this mystery that still linger.
This is Peter Wharf for Current State on WKAR. I'm speaking with Valerie Van Heest, author of the book Fatal Crossing, The Mysterious Disappearance of Northwest Airlines Flight 2501 and the Quest for Answers, and also author of the recent article Lost Over Lake Michigan from Michigan History Magazine. Tell me about your team's recent research and finding out more information about Flight 2501.
Well, when we set out on any quest, whether looking for this particular airplane or looking for shipwrecks like we have done now for the last dozen years, we start by researching these accidents, the vessels, the people on board, the protocol in situations like this. And in this case, I was looking for, I call it the smoking gun. I was looking for one little bit of information that might point us to the one spot on Lake Michigan where this accident happened. And in the course of that research, I instead found families of the victims who, after all these years, were still looking for closure. And I wasn't used to this. Usually when we're searching for a shipwreck, it might have happened 100 or 150 years ago, and there typically aren't people alive who knew the victim. Well, this was a relatively modern accident, and over the space of about 6 years, I connected with 51 of the 58 families, and each one of them had memories of that day, receiving the news, the follow-up from the airline and the government. And my contacting them brought all these memories back to the forefront. And now they're anxiously awaiting a discovery one day that might help solve this.
Yes, one of the most poignant things about your recent magazine article was the full page of photographs of all the people who were lost in the accident. And you can see their faces.
Yes. And one by one, they've come to me. The families have sent the photographs and told the stories. And they were ordinary people like you and I, traveling either on business or vacation or to see family. And their lives were just cut short. Youngest person was a young boy, 3 years old, Dana Malby, who lost his life. So what we remember by now studying this is the people, and we're reminded that accidents do happen, and it gives us a sort of a gauge to live our own lives, to never go to bed angry, and to accomplish our goals in as quick an order as we can. So all kinds of things have come out of the study of this accident, and I think most importantly, what I try to bring out in my book is that we can learn from past accidents. Now, none of us fly, well, a few of us out there, listeners, are probably pilots, but most of us in planes are in the back, and we can't affect what happens, flying. However, so many of us are in cars every day, and we make decisions, and sometimes those decisions lead to accidents. And I think that what I've learned in the course of writing this book and studying this accident is that each decision we make in our everyday lives and in our, particularly on the road, we make decisions that may lead to accidents. And what we've learned now about this particular accident, it was the culmination of a lot of problems, like most accidents. In this case, we know that Robert Lynn's clearance to go under the weather was denied. We learned that the flight advisory station that's supposed to transmit weather information to pilots, it was down that evening. We also learned that while many other pilots chose to turn back and wait out the storm, Robert Lynn, for some reason, chose to go ahead, a real risk. That obviously contributed to this accident. And we also know that Northwest Airlines now didn't convey the weather information to the pilot that could have helped him. So all of these things contributed to that accident.
And as you say, in many cases, a series of events adds up to a tragedy. And we know that there was some physical evidence remaining afterwards of the loss of this aircraft. And if I'm recalling correctly, you write about actual airplane parts, clothing, even pieces of bodies and a doll,
yeah.
Toys, things like that.
Oh, a tragedy.
Yeah.
The Coast Guard and the Navy spent a week picking up debris from the lake surface. They knew that it was swirling in the currents and it would eventually come to shore, so they did what they could to pick up all this debris. It was tragic evidence of what happened, a very violent crash with the surface of the lake, even possibly an explosion.
Right.
But these remains are so poignant to think about now. And in fact, what has come to my attention all these years later is a family of one of the victims, Merle Barton. All of his personal possessions were collected floating in the lake or washing ashore on the beach. He was a hairstylist. They found his hairstyling kit, and it was just metal implements that were twisted and rusted. They'd spent time in water and obviously survived this horrible traumatic crash. His suit jacket that's just torn to shreds, raincoat that has gashes in it, even his checkbook, and we can still read the checkbook register where he purchased his airline ticket for $94. His daughter, who was only two when this happened, has loaned me all these things, and they're now on display in a museum exhibit in South Haven at the Michigan Maritime Museum.
What's the future for your study of this event?
Well, the future is to continue the hunt, although with the writing of the book, I think we have answers. We have some closure. Many of the families I've talked to have more of an understanding now and acceptance of what happened. But as shipwreck hunters, we just can't give up. We've been out there every good weather day this spring, and we'll continue until conditions on the lake don't allow us to. We've already covered 600 square miles in the past 10 years, and we found 14 shipwrecks in the process. We just haven't found this airplane. So the hunt goes on.
Valerie Van Heest is a Michigan diver and shipwreck hunter, author of Fatal Crossing, The Mysterious Disappearance of Northwest Airlines Flight 2501 and The Quest for Answers, and also author of the recent Michigan History magazine article, Lost Over Lake Michigan. Valerie, thanks for telling the story.
Thank you so much, Peter.
For Current State, this is Peter Wharf.